It's Friday night, and the mood is right. Gonna have some fun, show you how it's done, TGIF.
Welcome to week 54 of the Two Guys Into Fridays podcast. My name is Steven, that over there is Travis.
What's going on, Steve?
Not much, and we're a TGIF podcast. We are, we really are. Thank you to Sarah from the Marty and Sarah podcast for the theme song this week.
Love those guys. They're hilarious.
Check out Sarah at Sarah Joy Shockey on Twitter. And follow us online while you're at it. TGIFcast. You can do that. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And you can go to YouTube and just search Two Guys Into Fridays and find us right there.
That's where we are.
Let's see. This is these episodes in air when?
These aired September 28th. Is the September 28th, 1990 was the date that these originally aired.
So back in 1990, this week, I didn't see a whole lot of news stories, but this one caught my attention. September the 26th, 1990, that is when the Motion Picture Association of America created the new NC-17 rating.
Ooh, NC-17. Does it say what the first NC-17?
Of course, Travis, come on.
Of course it does. Okay.
It doesn't say, but of course I did the research.
Okay.
Any guesses? Do you know it or no?
So I probably watched it.
Yeah. Did you watch anything lately that seemed like, all right, this maybe should be NC-17?
So there's a lot of movies that are, that you've never heard of that are, should be NC-17.
Okay.
I feel like I know the answer to this though, cause I saw it when I was watching it.
Okay.
Was it,
so there was another movie that got NC-17, but, got re-edited to get rated R.
And there's, then, a lot of, there's a lot of,
but I mean, before this movie, before this movie. So that would have been the first, but then this one is actually the first.
So I'm going to guess, I don't know, man, my mind's going blank.
All right. So go to the first official NC-17 movie was Henry and June. Have you watched it yet?
I don't know. That doesn't sound familiar.
It's got Fred Ward, Uma Thurman. I think it actually comes out in theaters in another week or two.
Let me look. Hold on.
Because it hasn't come out yet.
A week or two that I've seen it. Yeah. Oh, I did see it. I have watched it.
Yeah.
5.2. Oh, it's the movie. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's like it's like about Herman Miller and the woman in France that inspires him. So yeah, I did see that movie.
So did it deserve the NC-17 rating? That's what we really want to know.
I don't think. I mean, nothing in that movie strikes me as crazy.
Yeah. No, like.
Over the edge.
Extreme nudity or anything like that?
I mean, there was nudity. I guess maybe there was because there was like a lot of male nudity.
It says
it wasn't anything crazy, I don't feel like. It was just kind of naked bodies.
So this is what they said. They said the inclusion of the postcard Nin views at the start of the film.
Oh, okay.
And
I do remember reading that.
And some scenes of Les Bals du Bois Arts contributed to the NC-17 rating.
Right. So those were like historical art of like actual sex acts, but it was like sketches and stuff art, not like video or even photographs. It was
okay.
Sketches.
All right. So any guess what would have been the first if it didn't get re-edited?
I'm looking at my list.
It would have been right around the same time because the rating just came out.
Yep. I'm going to guess King of New York.
Predator 2.
Predator 2.
Have you watched it yet?
I mean, yes.
You did?
Yeah, I've seen it.
For your project?
Yes. I've seen it for a project. I'm not a fan of Predator.
Really?
Not.
Oh, they're fun.
The first one's not bad, but there is no redemption after that. It is an overrated franchise. Although I will say, in one of the new Predator movies, one of the best stunts I've ever seen in my entire life, and I've never done this before, but I was watching the movie, there was a stunt in the movie, and I was so blown away by it that I actually had to look it up, and it ended up winning like a bunch of awards in this like stunt world the year
what did they do?
It was like six people and they just fall down a hill. They just roll down the hill and they're like bouncing. You like see their bodies like bouncing down the hill.
All right.
It's pretty crazy. Like watching it, you're just like, how did they do that safely? And like, how did the stunt people pull that off?
What was our number one movie and music for the week?
Yeah. So number one song was again, Release Me by Wilson Phillips.
Uh-huh.
So that's the second week for that song. And the number one movie we kind of touched on this last week was Goodfellas, which to me is
okay.
One of, if not the most perfect mob movies that's been ever been made.
Gotcha. So, any birthdays this week?
We do have birthdays. We have a couple birthdays. So Monday, the 21st, was the birthday of Mr. Dave Coulier.
Oh.
We tweeted a happy birthday to him, and he liked that.
I did see that he liked it. That's pretty cool.
So if you ever want to come on the show, Dave.
He kind of knows we exist, I guess.
You do. You know we're out there. I think he's liked a couple of our tweets before. I don't think it's the first one.
And you think he runs his own Twitter?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, good.
Yeah, definitely. And then Friday the 25th, so the day that this podcast comes out, Heather Locklear, who we now know is Alex in Going Places.
Oh, that was her name. I kept just drawing a blank. I couldn't remember what her name was. They didn't say it one time, I think, that episode.
You would be wrong. They did say it at least one time.
What?
They did. It's at the very beginning, but they did say it.
You want to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so our lineup this week, Full House, Family Matters, Perfect Strangers, Going Places. We start off with the 8 o'clock slot, Full House Season 4, Episode 2. The name of the episode is Crimes and Michelle's Demeanor. Starts off, we get a little clip of Jesse showing Stephanie how he's redecorated his bedroom, right?
Yeah, he is man-caved that bedroom to the fullest ability you can in a small second-floor bedroom.
He's got guitars and Elvis posters, of course, and he has taken down the Pink Bunny wallpaper.
Wah, wah.
Is this... I can't remember if this is the episode that they kind of make a big deal about that. I guess it was, because like this is where they show that he framed one of the bunnies, right?
I know what episode you're thinking of, and you're thinking of the episode where he's going to move out with his family, with Rebecca, and he's going to leave the house.
That's when, before or after this?
After this.
But the bunny wallpaper's already down.
It's more of just that he's sad that they're all sad that he's leaving.
They're and just kind of remembering the bunny wallpaper, yeah. I guess.
I think I might be making this up. It's been a while since I've seen that episode, but I think he actually like leaves the bunny wallpaper with Stephanie or Michelle.
Like the framed bunny, like that?
The framed bunny, yeah.
Okay.
And if you remember, I don't know how far you've gotten in Fuller House, but when they're up in the attic in that scene where there's just a ton of stuff from old episodes.
I've gotten there.
One of the things is the framed bunny wallpaper.
I think I'm almost done with Fuller House.
Okay.
Right. The triple wedding is getting ready to happen. They've all they're picking out dresses and tuxes and stuff like
You're
that.
You're getting there. You're almost getting there.
so yeah, this scene, he redid the room. He shows the framed bunny wallpaper. And then Michelle comes in and she asks where the bunnies went. And that's when he shows her the frame. And then I think she says oh, now the room's cool or something like that.
Yeah, and it's sweet. I mean, that was a good idea, framing one of those bunnies. I wonder, I mean, that obviously still exists to some degree because they use it in Fuller House or some facsimile of it. So I wonder who owns that now. I'm sure someone has it on their wall.
So then we go to the theme song, and we come back with Kimmy, DJ, and Stephanie. They are all up in DJ and Stephanie's room, and they are getting ready to watch the MTV Video Music Awards.
Well,
they
don't say MTV.
Oh, they don't?
They're just going to watch the Video Music Awards.
Oh, I thought they said
at no point during the episode, because I was waiting for it, because I was wondering to see if they were going to say it, but at no point do they say MTV.
Okay, well, they've got a bunch of snacks, and Kimmy and DJ decide to start making some bets, right? Because they want to make the awards a little more interesting. And did you write down what the bets were? I already forgot.
Oh, I did. Yeah, so Kimmy bets 5 marshmallows that one of the guys from Guns N' Roses is going to fall off the stage.
That's right.
which I think is a pretty safe bet. Back then. And then DJ bets 4 cookies that they don't even find the stage, which again, probably a pretty safe bet back in 1990.
And then Michelle comes in and she wants to pillow fight with the girls. And then pretty this is rough. Stephanie hits DJ in the back of the head with a pillow and it is hard.
I mean, they're kids pillow fighting. They don't know. They don't have limits. They don't know.
They don't have concussion protocol back then. Cause this thing, I mean, it's a damaging shot. I bet you DJ is still feeling this to this day.
Should Steph and DJ have gotten awards for their stunt work in this?
Yeah, scene? I mean, maybe. Yeah,
maybe.
So, yeah, and then they pillow fight some more, and eventually they knock the coat rack down, and it smashes through the glass window upstairs.
That is correct.
Danny, of course, hears it. He comes inside, finds out what they did, punishes the girls, makes Kimmy go back home. The Stephanie and DJ aren't allowed to finish the Video Music Awards. And Michelle even though they blame her for starting it, does not get in any trouble for this pillow fight.
I think we need to flesh that out a little bit more.
Okay,
so Michelle actually admits, she's like, I started the pillow fight, it was me. And Danny says, DJ and Steph, you're in trouble because she's a kid and she doesn't know what she's doing, so you're responsible.
You guys should have made her stop. You guys should have stopped it before it started, kind of thing.
Because that sets up the theme for the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But DJ and Stephanie, not only are they not allowed to watch the VMAs, they also have to rake the yard. That's their punishment.
Well, it's their punishment. They're raking it for pay so that they can pay back for the window.
Okay.
I did like Danny's line to Kimmy here where he says, I should be punishing you and not your parents, but Kimmy, you need to go home.
Yeah. Cause, anywhere Kimmy is, that's a punishment, I guess.
That is punishment.
So then we go downstairs. We meet a character named Stu, I believe.
That's correct.
And he is there to show engagement rings to, I guess, Jesse, so he can pick one out for Rebecca for their upcoming wedding.
That's right. And he's worked with Jesse before. Or he's worked with Joey before. Joey has purchased a supposedly a Rolex from him, but we find out that is most likely not a real Rolex.
Does it say like Rolex or something? It's spelled wrong.
They do give it some name. I didn't write down what it was, but
so
it's a fake Rolex.
I was assuming this was like a surprise for Becky, but no, she walks in and she knows what's going on. She's there. Well, I guess we should set this up too. Like Jesse doesn't want to spend a lot of money, right?
Oh yeah. He's trying to find the cheapest ring possible.
And then he's like, all right, we need to go up a little step from that. And then he pulls out another ring, which Jesse's blown away by, but he shows him the price. And then he's like, a little like, oh man, this isn't going to happen. And that's when Becky comes in because he is kind of stuck in a spot where she thinks this is the ring. And without telling her how much the ring costs, he is kind of forced himself into buying this now for Becky.
Well, Stu's a smart salesman. Stu, as soon as Becky walks in, shows her the ring and says how great it is. And she's like, that's the one I want. Even though Jesse is like, I can't afford this.
Yep. So it looks like this is going to be the ring Becky gets, I guess, right?
Yeah, it definitely is.
So we now go.
Should we mention how we got our wedding rings for our wives?
We can.
Have we talked about this before on the podcast?
No, I don't think so. I don't know why we would have, right?
I don't know either, unless there was another wedding ring episode.
So instead of paying for wedding rings like most people do, back to back years, Travis and I both won wedding rings, and not only won wedding rings that both our wives are wearing right now, but
my wife does not wear that ring.
She doesn't?
No, it's in a lockbox in a bank.
Why didn't she wear it?
She doesn't wear any rings.
Oh, all right. Mine's wearing it, and they're identical rings. We both won the same contest back to back years, and I don't know what else you want to say about it.
Steve was on my team, so it helped a lot to have a previous winner.
Yeah.
And then we got banned.
And then they canceled the contest pretty much. Like it was like
pretty much.
Diamond Dash, I think they were calling it. And I won it the first year with a different partner, and then Travis won it the following year with me as his partner, and it worked out.
And then we got giant, huge bills from the IRS.
Yeah, that was the worst part.
That was the worst part. Oh, God. Anyways, moving on.
It's really locked up in a bank?
So we have a safe deposit box.
All right. What's the point?
What's the point? I mean, it would just sit in a closet at our house anyways.
Or on her finger.
She doesn't want to wear it. I don't care if she wears it or not.
All right. So then we go, where are we now? Someone's bedroom. Are we back in Stephanie's bedroom? Or are we in Michelle's bedroom?
We're in Michelle's bedroom now.
Danny is up there. He's reading to Michelle. And Michelle is doing everything she can to fight going to bed. So she tells him that she wants more stories, and then eventually she gets to a point where she tells him and Joey and Jesse that she wants the teddy bear song, right?
Yes, that's correct. She wants them to sing the teddy bear song.
And the three of them go into the teddy bear song. It's kind of like a doo-wop.
It's good. Elvis-y doo-wop type thing.
And it's obviously the three of them singing. Like, you can pick out like Danny's voice pretty clearly in it. And then, I mean, it's a long song, too. It seems like it goes on for a little while. But we get a huge like audience applause from it. Michelle claps when they're done. They turn off the lights to leave Michelle, go out the door. And of course, Michelle is still not going to bed. She gets out of the bed. And that's kind of like the last we see of this scene is her getting out of the bed.
Right. She gets out of bed, and then that kind of cuts to Jesse. They're in the hallway, and Jesse's like, I got to go do some stuff in my room. And we see him walk in his room.
Yeah, because we find out that he is selling his Elvis guitar to pay for this ring. Like, he doesn't have the money to buy it. He's got to do something.
And it sounds like it was a guitar that Elvis actually used in a movie. It's autographed. I mean, it seems like a big deal. He's got a little like car alarm on it that he clicks off when he opens the case.
I don't think he's too happy about it. But during this whole scene too, Michelle comes in. Obviously she didn't go to sleep. She doesn't want to go to sleep. And Jesse at this point tells both Joey and Danny that they are, I guess, being too easy on Michelle, and she is testing them and seeing how far she can get with what they want to give her.
Right. I think one of my favorite things in this scene was that Joey does an impersonation of Michelle.
Oh, it's good, too.
It is. It's very good. Expanding his repertoire, you know, it was a fun little scene.
So then we go to DJ and Stephanie. They are now watching the Video Music Awards, but they are watching them through binoculars across the yard or whatever into Kimmy Gibbler's house, where she is over in her house watching them.
Right. That is correct.
Michelle comes into their room at this point, and then Danny comes in after that. And Danny, of course, catches the girls watching the Video Music Awards. They get in trouble, make them go to bed, and of course... Again, Michelle kind of seems like she doesn't get in any trouble, and he's kind of blaming the girls again for her being up now.
Well, I guess that's true. I was going to say, what trouble would Michelle get in? But the fact that she's back out of bed, yeah, okay, I'm with you.
So the guys try to get Michelle to go to sleep again. They turn the lights off. She gets out of bed again, begs to come out of the room. And Jesse says that they need to, like, hang tough. I guess this is the scene, right, where she's, like, on one side of the door and the three guys are in the hallway on the other side of the door, right?
Yeah, I think this is – I haven't gotten to this point in my child's life, but I think this is a classic parenting moment where the kid wants to come out of the door and you've got to keep the door shut to teach them that they need to stay in the room. And she's, like, putting her hand under the door, and then she says the, like, magic phrase of
– Do you guys even love me anymore?
And, of course, Jesse's, like, melts and has to run in the room at that moment.
Yeah, and then I don't know how we get to it, but then we get to a scene where Michelle's downstairs.
Well, there's a commercial break, and then we go downstairs.
So she's downstairs. She is pushing one of those toy shopping carts into the living room towards the TV. It's full of snacks. I think there's a bucket of chicken in there. She gets on the couch, and she turns on the TV to apparently her favorite show, Arsenio Hall.
She's a big fan of Arsenio. She's doing the whoop, you know, like the, yeah, there, thank you, Matt. She's doing that. It's good stuff.
And while this is going on, Danny comes downstairs. She offers him some chicken, but he ends up talking to her and about everything, and she ends up falling asleep right there on the couch next to him.
I thought the food in the cart was just fake play food until she offered him that chicken, and I realized it was, in fact, real food.
So, yeah, she's out. We go up to the next day, probably. DJ and Stephanie are raking leaves in the backyard. What did I write there? I don't know. But Michelle comes out, and she... quickly goes and wants to play and messes up the leaves.
Yeah, you probably wrote that Stephanie was like carrying the leaves across the yard and kept dropping them everywhere, so they were making like very little progress.
I feel like I wrote swimming. I know she goes the swimming oh, we're getting happens, but I don't know why I wrote swimming. But
I don't know why you wrote it there, unless you were just commenting that there was a swimming pool in the backyard and like why is there a swimming pool in the backyard in the fall?
Yeah, maybe. But they end up giving Michelle the rake, tell her to rake if she's going to make a mess, and this is where Danny comes out, gets mad at DJ and Stephanie again. Who, again, really didn't do anything wrong. Michelle's the one that came and messed up the leaves. And they're like, if you're going to do this, if you're going to mess everything up, right?
Yeah, yeah. He was mad. I mean, you're right. It was kind of unjustified. But he was mad because he saw them having Michelle do their work for them.
So is this where the swimming thing happens? Like,
this is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because Michelle says that she sees the pool. She wants to go swimming. And Danny's like, you can't go swimming. It's too cold outside. Not right now. So she still wants to go swimming. Danny goes back inside. DJ and Steph are messing around with the leaves, raking them up a little bit more. And Michelle's like, I'm going swimming. And DJ's like, you can't do that. And she's like, I'm going. And she takes the pool inside.
All right. So then we go.
We go to Jesse's room.
Becky comes in and he's.
Wait. You're not going to talk about the ad they were trying to write?
No, go ahead.
They had a giant liver that they were holding, like smacking, trying to write an ad for the National Liver Council. Like they actually had a real like giant, I guess, cow liver that they like was part of the scene. They had to go and get that prop just for this like 15 second scene that had nothing to do with the rest of the show.
That was so important. I didn't even write a single note about.
It's just as crazy to me that somebody bought this giant, like fresh cow liver for literally a 15 second scene that has nothing to do with the rest of the show.
Yeah. So Becky comes in as they're doing this and yes. She comes in to talk to Jesse about the ring. And we find out that Becky has repurchased the Elvis guitar that Jesse sold, I guess.
Well, yeah, she got the ring appraised for insurance, and she found out how much it was worth. Right? And she's like, and then she somehow found out. I think Joe. We find out Joey tells her actually that he had to sell the guitar for the ring, and somehow she tracked it down and bought it back.
I hope she bought it back for what he sold it for, and not like he didn't pawn it or something.
Of course, it doesn't matter where he sold it. I assure you she paid more than he got for it.
Yeah, I mean, you would think, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, they have this conversation. Jesse's not happy about her buying it back because he feels like that he should be the one buying the ring. It's the manly thing to do. They shouldn't be splitting it. And if she goes and just rebuys this guitar, it's like he didn't even buy it in the first place.
Right. Yep. He's traditional old Jesse.
So he really doesn't like the whole idea, but he does end up taking back the guitar and agreeing with the whole situation with Becky.
Right. Well, cause she says that they need to be a team, which is a great way to look at it. But she also then bends his thumb back to force him to agree to take the guitar, which is what she did to Joey to get Joey to tell her about the guitar.
So then we go to the kitchen. Michelle's in there and she is in her bathing suit. She is in this kiddie pool. It is full of water. And she's just having a good time swimming in the kitchen.
It doesn't look like she's making a mess. It looks like she's keeping it rather contained.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what the problem is.
It's those Danny Tanner jeans. She doesn't want to make a mess.
That's true. Okay, that's true too. Yeah, I hear you.
So DJ and Stephanie are in there. They think, oh man, there's no way that we're going to get in trouble for this. We've got Michelle in this pool. She's in the kitchen. She did it all herself. She is finally going to get in trouble. And they decide that they're going to call her dad down to come see what's happened.
Yeah, I agree with them. Like, how is this their problem?
So he comes down, and of course, immediately he questions both DJ and Stephanie and wonders why they didn't stop her from doing this whole pool thing if they knew that that's what she was going to do. And they tell him,
forgetting that he is the adult in the house and not DJ and Stephanie.
They tell him that he lets Michelle do anything that she wants to. And Danny says he kind of realizes that it's true, right? And recognizes
that. Well, he turns to Michelle, and Michelle's like, yeah, you do.
And yeah, he realizes that this is all kind of his fault, the whole way that he's been treating both Michelle, Stephanie, and DJ.
Right.
And Danny does have a talk with Michelle at this point, and this is where he calls the first official punishment for Michelle.
This is the first punishment she's going to experience.
And what does she have to do? Like nothing really, right?
Well, no, she's like in timeout. She goes up, she's in her room staring at the wall. We don't know how long she's been there for, but you know, she's a child, so you're not going to keep her there forever.
And then does he go and talk to her after this? Is that what the next
scene is? Yeah. So we go up to Michelle's room. Michelle's upstairs in the chair staring at the wall. That's obviously her punishment. Danny comes in to ask if she learned a lesson, and they kind of have this heart to heart conversation about her kind of learning that, you know, she can't test him.
I wrote down the lesson is that Joey and Jesse all know what is best for her. And when they tell her to do something, she should do it. And that's the lesson right. that she's supposed to have learned.
Exactly.
And then she asks her dad if she is still her princess. And Danny says, you got it, dude. And that's the end of the episode.
You got it, dude. And there's also, she also does ask too, if she can go downstairs and watch Arsenio.
Loves and that Arsenio, right?
He says no. I never really watched Arsenio Hall. I think I was too young to really get it.
Yeah. But I mean, it was a late night talk show on at like 11:30, 12 o'clock at night or something like that.
That's the other part.
So yeah, we go into 8:30 slot Family Matters season 2, episode 3. The name of the episode is Marriage 101. It starts off with Eddie. This is like our little intro clip. He is bandaging up and eventually going to cast up Urkel. He has wrapped his entire body from head to toe, and he's about to go get the plaster to finish this job. He's doing it, what, for like a test or something for school?
Yeah, I think he's trying to do a test for like EMT. I don't know what exactly the test is for, but he's got Steve wrapped up like mummy style. Like, yeah. Everything but his face.
So Carl comes in when Eddie goes to the kitchen to grab the plaster, and Steve starts talking to him. And like the joke here is Carl grabs some like medical tape, tapes up Urkel's mouth so he can't talk anymore. And then that's kind of like the end of the scene right there.
Well, Carl immediately tries to ignore Urkel as soon as he walks in, but Urkel just keeps talking, and that's why he tapes his mouth. But there was also a line that Steve said to Eddie that was pretty good about how he's really familiar with medical things because he had a nosebleed at birth when the doctor slapped the wrong end.
So we get our theme. We come back. Harriet, she's coming downstairs, and she is all dressed up. It looks like she's getting ready to go out somewhere. And we find out that she has an upcoming date with Carl, and all of the women in the house are excited for her and think she looks great and everything.
Yeah, she looks great. She looks ready to go.
So Carl comes in. He's excited. He's showing that he has some tickets in his hand, and everyone's excited for Harriet and Carl because they are kind of imagining what these tickets might be. I think they say like Paul Abdul and MC Hammer and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're trying to guess what the band is they're going to go see.
And we find out, no, these were tickets that Carl could not pass up. They are tickets to a big hockey game downtown, and the women are quickly not excited for Harriet, and Harriet is not excited either.
Blackhawks versus the Penguins, seats right behind the goalie.
Are those good seats?
Are those good seats in hockey, like right behind the goalie? It seems like you wouldn't be able to see a whole lot.
So I always liked those seats when I went to hockey games because that is where you have the chance of catching a puck. That's why.
Do they not have I don't really know much about hockey.
Pucks go in the crowd. They do. They will hit they the. I don't know if they still do. I don't know if they've changed the netting. But what would happen is, a player would take a shot. The puck will hit the top of the crossbar and then bounce up high over top of the glass.
Over the glass. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But those were seats. You like sitting behind the goal.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool.
So then we go to school where we are in Laura and Steve's classroom, right?
Correct.
The bell rings. Urkel comes running in because he doesn't want to be late, and then somehow he gets stuck on the like front chalkboard map that like raises up and down, and he gets flown up to the top of it, I guess, and somehow he grabs the flagpole on the way up, and he's like up on the map holding a flag.
This is a great physical gag because so he basically tackles the flagpole as he's running in and like tripping over himself, and then ends up with his back belt loop like hooked to the map. He's lifted like three four feet off the ground and perfectly like holds the flag out like he's a little like statue flag holder. He nails it. He nails every. I wonder how many times that they did this or how he practiced it, because in the filmed version, I mean, he nails it every mark. He hits it perfectly.
Yeah, and like Travis said, he's out there. He's holding up the flag, and then the whole class kind of gets into it and starts saying the Pledge of Allegiance because he's holding the American flag up, right?
Yeah, and then the teacher says, no, you only do the pledge when I hold the flag, which I was like, the teachers do that? The teachers hold flags when we did the pledge when we were kids? I don't remember.
I remember ours. Ours, the teacher did not hold it. It was like in a little holder. It was a small flag, and it was like up on top of the chalkboard kind of thing. Every class I was in, I feel like.
Yeah, that sounds right. That's how I remember it, too.
So where do we go from here? We're still in the classroom. They say the pledge. Class starts.
Urkel unpacks his desk.
He's got this crazy desk too. It's like
it's not as crazy as I thought it was going to be. I thought there was going to be a lot more, and it's a lot simpler than I was.
It's about four times the size of a regular school desk.
It is not four
his desk. Yes, it is. His desk flips over to the left, and then it flips open. It's like four times. I feel like
no, it's only one. It's only the additional part on the right hand side of his desk. That's
so you're saying double sized desk.
Double-sized desk, and then he puts out like some pens and pencils and a picture of Laura and something else, like a stapler or something.
The teacher's trying to teach, but then every time she tries to tell them something or get him to do something, Urkel like raises his hand all excited, and you get the like, ooh, and he wants to say something and trying to interrupt her. And we do find out here that the class is going to have a class project where they have to do what's the right word here? Like a fake marriage with one of their with one of their classmates, right?
Yeah, they have to couple up and pretend like they're married for 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks,
do like a budget, you know, do like playing if they want to have kids and just typical married stuff.
Yeah, and we find out the class is going to get to pick their own partners.
Seems like such a bad idea in every way, shape, or form. Because the way that they do it is...
Everyone makes a list, right? And they
pick the list of the three people you want to be with, yeah.
Okay. And we also find out here, too, that everyone is going to grade their partner. So whoever your partner is, you give them a grade. And everyone starts writing their list at this point, too, right?
Right. And, such a bad idea.
And the teacher... Steve, of course, is so excited. We know what he's writing down. And the teacher goes over to his desk to reveal that all three names that he has written down are Laura Winslow. So we kind of get the idea that that's probably who's going to be paired up in this class.
I mean, she could have not said that. And we would have known that's who he was going to get paired up with. Of course, that's who he's going to get paired up with.
So we go back to the house. We find out at the hockey game, Harriet got hit by a hockey puck. And she's got, like, tape on her head or something like that.
Yeah, like a Band-Aid.
And Harriet says that Harriet tells Carl that she called and confirmed the reservations for dinner because they're still going to try to go out on a date night. And
at Shea Josephine's, which we know is her favorite restaurant from season one.
And Carl tells Harriet that he's sorry. There's a change of the plans. One of the officers is getting married. He got moved from into the hooker patrol is what we find out. I forgot what his original role was.
Traffic. He was a traffic cop, and then he got moved to vice, basically. Fell in love with a hooker. They're getting married, and now Carl, just so we can lay this out. Now Carl is asking Harriet if he can break their date to her favorite restaurant so he can go to the bachelor party of the guy who's marrying a hooker.
Oh, so it's not even, let's not go to this date night so we can go to the wedding. It's so I can go to the bachelor party?
Yes.
I missed that part. But she's like, I guess she says okay, right?
Begrudgingly. She's not happy about it, but she lets him go. Rachel does some intimidating kind of swipes with some scissors as Carl walks by.
Yeah, we find out that, I mean, the whole thing is Harriet misses the romantic side of Carl. She hasn't had it in a long time. And it's the biggest thing is it kind of makes her scared that maybe, I don't know if she's scared because she thinks that maybe he doesn't like her anymore or
she's worried that
it's not ever coming back or what it is.
Yeah, she's scared the romance is gone.
So we go back to the... to the classroom. This is probably the next day or day, a couple days later or whatever. And the pairings have been posted for the project. And of course, Laura and Steve are partners for this mock marriage that is coming up.
And we also get introduced to Maxine. Maxine's in like 58. Well, I know she is. She's in 58 episodes throughout the run of the series. So she's a regular character. And we find out who she gets paired up with.
I didn't realize this was Maxine's first episode.
First episode of many. Yeah. Okay. She gets paired up with
some dude, Mark, like the class hunk.
Mark, some guy. Yeah.
So she's excited. Laura's not excited. Steve, of course, is excited. And we will find out where this goes on in a little bit.
Well, Laura faints. She's so not excited.
That's right.
And Steve,
she does.
Goes over to help her.
So then we go to a family dinner. Everyone's in the living room. Laura and her whole family. Laura comes in. They're all sitting at the table already, and she looks pathetic, sad. They ask her where she's been.
I wrote, Laura slinks in. She's sad again.
Yeah, I had a feeling you'd say something about that, because last week she wasn't sad, right? Because she had
her
job
sad.
And everything.
Now she's sad
again. She sits down, I believe, and then everyone starts humming Here Comes the Bride. Like, they know what happened. They know Urkel is her partner, and they are going to give her the hardest 2 weeks she's probably ever had.
Poor girl.
Urkel comes over at this point. Is this in the kitchen still where he's looking for Carl's blessing?
Yep, it's in the kitchen.
So he's over there because he really is taking this seriously. He wants Carl's blessing to marry Laura, even though that's what the project is, and there's nothing that really has to do with anything. But we also find out what Urkel means. Did you write this down?
I did write this down. Real quick, though, Carl is fine with Urkel marrying Laura.
Yeah, because he had a reason, right? Like, if you're with her, then no one else is going to be.
I think he just thinks it's hilarious.
I mean, that too, for sure. So, in Kenya, Urkel means a benign cyst on the foreleg of a wildebeest. Did I get that right?
You got it.
And I guess that, I don't know if that's where the family name came from originally, but that's what it means in Kenyan. We find out.
I think that there's some origin there for the family name, because that's how it all comes up. So
we go to a shot in the living room now. Laura is eating dinner. She's got like,
we're 2 weeks later, by the way.
Oh, does it say that actually?
It did. Yeah.
I know we find that out in a minute. So, she's eating dinner. Looks like she's got like a TV tray type thing, and she is swarmed with Urkel gifts. There's like flowers and stuffed animals and balloons all over the living room. Yeah. He has been taking care of her for the last 2 weeks, I guess.
Right. It's obvious the food that she's got was served to her by somebody, obviously Urkel. But
yeah. So Laura tries to, Urkel turns on some like romantic music, right? Because he's saying,
yeah,
this is the last night of our marriage. We need to, I need to set the mood. And this is my attempt to get something else out of this marriage while I have the chance for this project, I guess.
Sure. Because that's how this works.
Yeah. And he tries to, Laura tries to kick him out. She says that she wants a divorce. And at this point, we find out that Steve has purchased a ring for Laura. She looks at it. She realizes that she cannot accept it. We find out that Steve has spent $800 on this ring, which is a lot of money for a kid, right?
Yeah, so there's a couple things here. So the first thing, what he actually wanted from her before this all started was just a kiss. I shouldn't say just a kiss. He wants a kiss. And she says no. And she's like, I got a headache. And he's like, that's cool. I brought aspirin. And she says, I don't want to, I'm not giving you a kiss. But also this $800, did you make a note of where he got this $800 from to buy the ring?
I remember, but I don't remember exactly.
So evidently he has what he calls a stay away fund, which is his family members send him money annually so that he will not come and visit them.
Oh, wow.
So he cashed in his stay away fund for the $800 for the ring. And the ring, of course, reminded me of
Full House, right?
Where we had another expensive ring that was part of the story. So I think I like this because I feel like we're back on that track of stories of these episodes having similar stories throughout them.
Yeah, because I made a note of Perfect Strangers being a little similar to Full House as well.
Yeah. Agreed.
So yeah, she gives back the ring. She says, Steve, just leave me alone. And he says, he kind of gets all sappy with her. This is the closest that he's ever actually going to be to marrying her. He knows that he isn't worthy of her. Says a bunch of like, you're beautiful, you're the best thing ever. And she gets pretty emotional, starts crying as well. They both look like, I think Steve's crying as well, right?
I don't know if he's actually tearing up, but yeah. I mean, he's like, he's pretty sad.
But you can see tears coming down Laura's face during this.
Oh, yeah, super fake tears that they put on every time they cut away the camera.
Oh, don't tell me that.
Oh, come on. She is not a great crier. And you could tell every time that they cut away from her and then went back to her, she had substantially more tears.
They're real tears.
They're not real tears.
Yeah, she feels really bad about this whole situation, though.
Yeah.
So we go to, where are we here? Is it,
so we go to an actual, yeah, it's Harriet and Estelle. And this is actually, no, is Estelle there? No, it's Harriet and Laura walks in, but this is actually a new part of the house we've never seen before. This is like another side porch from the kitchen. We normally see the back porch that's open and has the swing. Uh-huh. This is like a side porch area that also it looks like it goes to the side of the house. And we've never seen this area before. So it's a new piece of the set for us. They're using that budget that Urkel earned for them.
Yeah, so they're having this conversation, Laura and her mom, about like men and how romance is important. And Harriet's kind of like talking about, like, you can tell it's like the current situation with her and Carl. Sure. And Carl is in the kitchen or something, and he's listening this whole time. And
yeah, Carl either comes in from the bachelor party or comes downstairs and overhears it. But the main point is, like, we know Urkel's annoying, and we know that this is not a real thing, but you should be grateful that he is as sweet as he is and cares as much about you as he does.
Yeah, and Carl, as he's listening to, he kind of realizes that Harriet is missing the romantic side of Carl that he used to, I guess, give more to her.
Yep, exactly.
So then we go back to the class. It is the final day of the project where all of the students are now grading their partners for the wedding project, like whatever they felt they deserved on how they performed in the project.
Poor Mark.
Yeah, first up is Mark and Maxine, right?
Well, yeah, we don't see Mark, but we see Maxine give her grade to Mark.
F minus grave. I don't know if we should say poor Mark, because the, one of the main reasons why she gave him this grade is because she caught him cheating with an older woman.
They're not really married. It's fine.
No, it's not fine. This is 2 weeks where you are not supposed to be doing that. It's part of your grade.
This is like the baby assignment where even though it's an egg, if you break it.
Yeah, it's exactly like that.
That's fair. No, that's fair. You're right. That's fair. That's fair.
So Maxine does say that she wants a divorce, gives him an F minus, and then the teacher calls up the last couple and starts with Urkel, right?
That's correct.
He goes up there. He says a bunch of nice things to Laura, even though he's saying them in a way where you can tell he's still upset about, like, I guess how the whole relationship mock wedding thing ended, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's super sad.
Super sad, but he does end up giving her an A. And then the teacher calls up Laura, and Laura gives a little speech where she says that Steve was annoying, but he's also hardworking, and he's also a pest, but he was a very good husband, and gives Steve an A+.
Did she really need to tell everybody that he was annoying and a pest and that she wanted to slap him? I feel like that was a little much. I feel like that was mean. She could have just been like, look, it was great. A+.
And then I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I mean, she did not need to say all that, but she wanted to make both Steve happy and keep her coolness with the rest of the class. She doesn't want to just come across acting like Steve's the best thing ever. She still wants to keep up her reputation as being, well, I don't know.
It doesn't work because all Steve hears is you love me, A+, we're destined for each other.
Yeah, he yells out, Snookums, you love me, gets on his knees and just like holding her around the legs. And that's kind of the end of the classroom scene.
That is, yes.
So then we go back to the house. Carl gets home. He tells Harriet that he overheard the talk that she had with Laura, I guess the day before, and he realizes that he has not been the best husband lately. He tells them that they're going out. They're going to go out to her favorite restaurant, right?
Chez Josephine.
And he has presented her with a gift, which looks very familiar to a gift that we saw earlier in the episode. She opens it up. It is a ring, and we find out that it is the same ring he had purchased from Urkel, and he bought it for a deal of $1,000.
He talked Urkel down to $1,000. Urkel made $200, and Carl is none the wiser.
And then it wasn't just the ring, though. It was the ring plus the romantic music that he had played for Laura. Steve threw that in the package as well.
Yeah, he gave him that mixtape.
So they dance. Both Carl and Harriet look in love with each other, and he says, worth every penny. And that's the end of the episode.
That's it. I think Carl could have tried a little harder, but...
To bargain, yeah, or to be romantic?
To be romantic.
Like, he could have done more than that?
He didn't say much. Like, I feel like he was really kind of like, lowballing it on the like, I'm sorry part of the whole part of it.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Dinner, ring, dancing, not enough. We need some emotional impact from your mouth.
I think the words are important too, and he failed in that category. So,
all right. So then we go to the 9 o'clock slot. We're at Perfect Strangers season premiere of season 6. Name of this episode is Safe at Home. It starts off. We are in the apartments. Larry is making Balky, Marianne, and Jennifer come into the apartment with their eyes closed, because he has purchased something that he wants to surprise all of them with, something that he knows is going to be a lot of fun for everyone and something that they're all going to love very much.
Did the set look bigger to you? I know it's the same set. It's the same layout. But did it look physically bigger to you?
I did not make a note of that. Was all the furniture there? I know sometimes that can do it. Like, was the couch and the table and everything?
It was like the whole kitchen area. I feel like they expanded the kitchen area by like 3 to 5 feet.
Yeah,
gave it more room
to
play. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just being, I don't know. Maybe not, but it seemed like.
So eventually Larry reveals what he has purchased, and it is a stereo chair. It looks like a giant office chair with a couple of speakers in the headrest, and maybe a speaker on the side on a pole too. I couldn't tell what that was.
No, that was the control. Those were the controls. Obviously a chair that this is a chair that a 19-year-old college kid who's leaving home and living in the dorm for the first time would buy to play Call of Duty.
Yeah, I mean, it's now what we know as the video rocker. It's the same thing pretty much. Except,
oh, is that what it's called, a video rocker?
Yeah, yeah. It's just more of an office chair style rather than the ones that like sit on the ground and rock a little bit.
Right. I would have, I was hoping that Balky was right, because Balky thought it was going to be a TMNT dream house. And I was, yeah. I was excited to see what that looked like.
So I think Balky makes a joke too. What does he call it?
Like he does.
The Sony Sitman. Is that what he says?
Got it. Sony Sitman.
Which is pretty good.
Yep.
Larry sits down. He's listening to some Kenny Rogers. He's singing along. He looks
and
like
he's the only one that can hear it.
Yeah. No one else can hear it. So this chair is set up so only the person sitting down can hear it. He looks like he's having a good time though, singing. And then no one else is really getting into it except Balky kind of crawls onto his lap so he can hear the music as well. Sings along with Larry, and then they get up at this point. And
yeah, I mean, that's it. Balky like slowly creeps over the side of the chair into his lap, and it's, you know, a fun little scene with the two of them.
So Marianne and Jennifer get talking, and they are worried because there have been some robberies in the area lately, and they think that Larry has a bunch of expensive stuff, and he should think about getting like security.
But the chair is really what put him over the edge, which was shocking to me that Jennifer was like, or Marianne was like, this chair is really the problem here. This chair is going to get you robbed. And I'm like, what? Who's going to know they got this stupid chair? And B, like, thieves are not going to break into your house and steal the giant, ugly chair. They're going to steal, like, small, portable things that they can actually sell to other people.
Yeah. So Larry, of course, plays down the idea. He doesn't need a security system. He's got an oak door and deadbolt, and that's all a man needs. Because
all a man needs.
No one needs a big security system, especially where they live.
Not in the middle of Chicago.
Yep. So we go a little later. I know you're going to love this scene. This is your...
Oh, wait. I do want to mention one thing, just because I like making notes of the Miposian kind of mythology. So they're talking about how Balky says they have an alarm system in Meepos, and Larry says, I thought you told me they didn't have any thieves in Meepos. And he says, you're right, but sometimes people from Kleptos sneak over
the island of Kleptos.
The island of Kleptos, and they steal stuff. So I just like adding, I like making notes of the Miposium lore.
And those Kleptos are maniacs, is what he also says.
You know what? The way that he said it, it was so spread out. Like, he didn't say it as smoothly as you did. Uh-huh. He laid the joke out. And I didn't even catch it. Now that you've said it, I'm catching the joke.
So I don't know if we're the next day or later that day or whatever, but Balky's in the kitchen. He is making some ice, cracking the trays into a bowl.
Yep.
Got something going on because he's laughing and we don't really know what it is.
He is like.
Larry says that, come on, Balky, it's time. We got to go pick up the girls for dinner. And Balky warns Larry about going to the restaurant because he knows he's going to eat spicy food. It's going to upset his stomach. Larry's like, you know what? You're right. Larry goes to the cabinet to get some Maalox. And you can really tell Balky's up to something here. And Larry reaches into the cabinet. A giant rat trap snaps his hand right on his fingers. Balky's laughing. And then he holds out the bowl of ice, grabs Larry's hand and sticks it right into the bowl of ice, because this was his plan the entire time.
He was ready to go. And he calls the mousetrap a Miposian crime stopper. And he says in Meepos, they're tested on actual fools.
Yeah, I don't know. So is it just rat traps that are Miposian crime stoppers? Because he says that he's placed Miposian crime stoppers all around the apartment. I didn't know if that was like different traps or just mouse traps all over the place.
I think they're mouse traps. I don't think Balky knows them as mouse traps. He knows them as these Miposian crime stoppers.
See, I was hoping this episode would be like a Home Alone thing where he had like traps all around the apartment in case it gets broken into.
A Saw style episode.
Yeah. So where are we at?
Now we go to the window. He wants to show. He basically wants to show Larry the other kind of contraption that he's put together.
Oh yeah. So Larry shows.
Balky shows Larry.
Balky shows Larry if a burglar comes in the apartment, and he happens to step on this rug, and then he shows. Does he take like the lamp or the what does he take? Like a, it's either Go, oh no golf, golf clubs right. Takes a golf bag, sticks it right into the middle of the rug, and then you get this awesome scene where like this rope is just like spinning around the golf bag, lifts it up in the air, and flips it upside down. And that's kind of like the trap that he has made for burglars if they happen to come in and come through the window.
Yeah, I couldn't even figure out how this snare worked. It just was like, it was like a quick little like looping thing that brought the bag up. It was crazy.
Yep. So what does he call it? The klepto catcher, right?
I didn't catch that.
He's roped up by the klepto catcher is what I wrote. And then wrote a quote. At least we know one thing. What? Oh, no. That's further on. So Larry and Balky get back from dinner. They show the apartment. It is trashed. And we are under the assumption that the apartment has been robbed. And we find out that they took the stereo chair. That's what the robbers came into.
Why? Why?
So then Larry is like freaking out. He ends up stepping on the klepto catcher rug, and then he gets tied up. And then this is where Balky says, at least we know one thing, they didn't come through the window.
I liked that until Larry explained to Balky that they had been robbed, that Balky was embarrassed because somebody had been in the apartment and they had left it in such a mess. Yeah,
that was good too.
I also think that if they want to get that stereo chair back, all they probably need to go is to wherever the Ritz is now. And it's I bet you Twinkacetti has got it sitting there with a price tag on it ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, we still don't know what happened to the Ritz, if it's still there or not. Something happens. It has to between episode or seasons 2 and 5, I guess.
I mean, Larry could have just gotten a better job. Nothing has to happen to the Ritz. He could have just been like, I'm out, Twink. See you later.
But they moved apartments too. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe the building burnt down, but I think it's just moving on up.
I can see Larry and Balky accidentally burning it down for sure.
You're probably right. That's a good call.
But I guess we already had that in Family Matters, but also that's another reason why it probably happened.
Yeah, exactly.
So we go to commercial, we come back, and a security system is getting installed in the apartment. There's a guy there, he's putting little sensors or locks on the windows, and they have installed a legit like bank vault door on the front door.
Giant thing.
Larry,
where did Larry get all this money all of a sudden? He bought this stereo chair. He's putting this ridiculous alarm system in his apartment. And you're probably about to say this, but he also has now bought a second stereo chair.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't have been cheap, and he can't be making that much money at the newspaper. There's no way.
As far as we know, nothing's changed with his job situation.
Yeah. So they're installing the security system, and Larry explains to Balky how they've got to have the best security system around, which is complete Larry flip-flopping on whatever he said in the beginning of the episode. We don't need this, and now we need the absolute best of this, pretty much.
Well, because he said that the thieves out there are high-tech, and they've got beepers and cell phones and computers. And I've never met, I mean, every high-tech thief I know has a beeper. So
1990, everyone did.
I know. So the name of the security system, they say it here, it's called the Doomsday System, which I thought was kind of timely because it made me think of the Doomsday Device and the Road Warriors.
Rest in peace. So now, like Travis said, he bought a new chair, and they have to come up with a secret code for the security system. At first, Larry is saying that Balky needs to help him come up with it. And then he realizes that no one should know the security code. Not Jennifer or Marianne or Balky. It should be something that only Larry knows the code to.
Great idea. Great idea, Larry.
And
sure, this will work out just fine.
So he comes up with a bunch of different codes. I think he uses his like date of birth, and Balky figures it out. And then like he changes it to, or I guess he's doing a bunch of like calculations and saying about
his driver's license divided by his inseam, subtract a shoe size, which there's no possible way that could ever be
a four digit number, right? Yeah.
But it comes out to, Balky does the math with him, and it comes out to 5,291.
Yeah, makes no sense, but sure.
Impossible. It's impossible.
Balky just keeps figuring out all these combinations all the way up until the last one before the commercial break, which ends up being like his mother's year of birth or something, right?
1945, yep.
So Larry, we go to commercial and we come back, and Larry is up. It's middle of the night. He's walking through the house. He ends up knocking over the golf clubs and activates the alarm system.
Right.
There are lasers shooting all over the place.
Scanning the room.
He's doing what he can to avoid the lasers because he knows if the lasers trip, then that's going to set off everything. And he ends up moving around the lasers and calling for Balky. We get another like physical comedy scene of the two of them trying to avoid all these lasers. I mean, it requires some ridiculous movements like ducking and jumping. And
it seems like if they had just stayed low the entire time, it would have been fine. The lasers never hit the floor. But I like when Balky kind of sleepwalks into the room at first. When he's waking up, the lasers move with him. So he is just walking in the room and doesn't set off the lasers.
Yeah, and Larry tells Balky that what they have to do is they have to set the password, like the secret code, into the keypad without breaking any of the beams to turn it off.
Right, which makes sense.
So they end up like avoiding all the lasers. They make it all the way to the keypad. Balky stands up to do the Dance of Joy, and he ends up setting off one of the lasers, and all the sirens start going off.
Yes.
Larry, though, he's at this keypad, and he can't remember his code. He has no idea what he made it. And in anger, Larry rips out the keypad off of the wall. I think the security system turns off for a second. And you think, oh, maybe this actually worked. But then all the lights in the apartment turn red. And then we hear over the speaker, the doomsday system has been activated.
Doomsday device.
60 seconds till the release of poison gas.
Oh, man. You thought he would know that before he was getting his thing installed. But so, he didn't read the instructions, so whatever.
Yeah. So the timer continues. They don't know what to do. They try to go for the window. They try to break it like with a toaster or a teapot or something. He remembers that it's reinforced security glass. And then Larry comes up with the idea that they can pick up the stereo chair and throw it through the window to break it. It doesn't.
Well, go ahead. Balky comes up with the idea and Larry's like, no. And then Larry's like, yes, we have 10 seconds left.
So they pick it up. They throw it through the window. And there's then a notice on the speaker from the alarm saying, owners, the intruders have been scared away. Everything's been turned off, kind of thing.
What a lame security system.
So we then go to a later scene where we see Balky and Larry. They are taping up the chair, fixing it from all the rips that it has from going through the glass. And Larry admits to overdoing it once again, this time with the security system. And he sits in the chair, and the whole thing falls apart, and then that's the end of the episode.
So you said there was something in this episode that reminded you of Full House.
Full House, just the beginning. So it was like the name of the episode, the Full House one, was like Crime and Michelle, and then this one had to do with like crime and robbery. And not directly, but it just made me think of the other one when it first started.
Sure. Okay, cool.
Yep. So we then go to our final episode of the week. This is Going Places, Season 1, Episode 2. It starts off in the television studio office. I'm calling them kids. I don't know what to call them, but
I just called it the group.
Jack, Charlie, Kate, Alex, they all took the bus into work because Charlie's car has broken down and it is in the shop, right?
Right. And Jack is actually not with them yet. He's renting a car while Charlie's car is in the shop.
Kate shows off her jacket that has been spray paint tagged by somebody, I guess, while she was on the bus. Yes. And they talk about how they never want to ride the bus again. And then Dawn, their boss, comes in. And I guess she had called them in, but she forgot exactly.
She can't remember why.
Why she had called them in, because she is now there with her new personal assistant, Rolf. Who it's not the
personal
same guy from
personal trainer. Yeah, it is a different guy. You're right.
A different guy than the guy at the front counter, right?
It is. Yeah. That whole kind of setup has changed, I think.
Okay. And Rolf or Charlie at this point too, we see this new girl in the office named Bree, right?
Bree is the secretary, and Charlie has like frozen staring at her, drooling over Bree.
Yeah, he is obsessed with her. Girls, Alex and Kate, is that their names? Yeah.
You're right, Alex and Kate.
They end up encouraging Charlie that he needs to go over and talk to her if he likes her. So he does make his way over to her desk. He's stumbling. He starts to say something. I think it just came out as gibberish, though, right?
It's all just mumbly gibberish. Yeah,
and then the girls are laughing in the background. And then eventually Charlie doesn't get anything out, but runs back to the chair where the girls are. And then
well, first he knocks a bunch of stuff over on the desk and then like hides behind the desk immediately so she doesn't see that he just knocked
like ducks down in front of her, right?
Yeah. So, she's got his back to him, so I don't think she sees him, but it's right there next to her.
So Jack comes in at this point. Well, I wrote down this too. So I guess Charlie says something to the girls, like, I guess you can't just say like a quick one-liner or something to a girl like this. And then this is
can't just say, hey, sweet cakes.
Yeah. And then Jack comes in and says, hey, sweet cakes, what's shaking? And then she's like, oh, hey, Jack, like falls forward immediately. But we do find out that Jack has rented a Porsche, and this is the replacement car for...
Do you say Porsche or do you say Porsche?
So I know Porsche's right, but I usually say Porsche.
Is it right? I don't know.
Yeah, Porsche's right. Charlie says Porsche throughout the whole episode, while the rest of the actors say Porsche the whole episode.
I don't think Porsche's right.
Porsche's right. And... it's funny because I trust Charlie because he was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off and there were some expensive cars in that show in his dad's.
I think there was a garage. Yeah, there was. But it's an Italian car, right? Porsche is an Italian car?
It's Porsche.
It's not how you would pronounce it, though.
It is, though.
I'm going to ask my Italian tutor tomorrow.
Okay. Sounds right. Good. Charlie's upset that he rented this car and upset with the whole Bree situation. So he leaves. Kate goes after him. And then...
he leaves to take the car back, too. I think that's worth mentioning.
That's right. He's going to return the car. Kate goes
And the reason
him.
Kate goes with him is because she's never ridden in a Porsche, so she's going to ride in this car.
Yeah, and I wrote a quote that you've never been in a Porsche before. I don't know who said that. I guess that was Alex, probably. And then
Yeah, it was Alex.
And then Kate, I guess, says, of course I have. I just have never made a phone call from one, because Jack had mentioned that the car had a phone inside of it.
Right. You're right. Yep.
So... I also wrote down a prediction here. Oh, no, this is a little bit later. So theme song plays. We are now at a gas station. Charlie and Kate ran out of gas because Jack didn't put enough gas in the tank. And they were on the way to take the car back. And they're now at the gas station getting gas. Kate goes in to, I don't know, does she go in to use the bathroom or get a snack or something?
She's going to go buy a drink and pay for the gas.
And then while he starts pumping the gas, the alarm goes off. The wipers go crazy.
Because he can't find the button to open the gas tank,
right?
Yeah, so he ends up opening the trunk, which is in the front in those cars, and he ends up turning on the wipers and putting down the top and all the stuff. Yeah.
And then at this point, while he's, I guess he eventually gets it off, but Bree from the office shows up at the gas station, and immediately comes over to talk to Charlie because she sees the car and is more excited than anything about the car.
And totally doesn't recognize him, which is a completely unbelievable.
No, that's believable.
No way is that believable.
So
they work in the same office
day or two, maybe. She's a temp.
Is she a temp?
Yeah, they mentioned that.
Okay, I'll give it to you if she's a temp.
She's a temp. Promise you she's a temp.
All right.
So she does end up asking Charlie out on a date, gives him her phone number, and is like super coming on to him all because of this car.
No, it's because she likes him.
All because of this car. This is where I wrote my prediction down. We'll see if it's right. I wrote down that he is eventually going to let Bree drive the car, and she is going to wreck this car.
I thought there was going to be a car crash in this episode, too.
So we now go to the house that all four of them live at. Charlie is...
I do want to say, because of the comment I made about her not recognizing him, that Kate at this point comes back to the car and Bree immediately recognizes Kate.
That's why you're saying it's not possible?
No. I just think it's generally not possible. But they play that up a lot by having her recognize Kate and not recognizing Jack. Or Charlie, excuse me.
So at the house, Charlie's dressed up for this date. Jack is trying to give Charlie a bunch of tips on like how to be cooler, I guess. He shows him like how to fix his outfit and take off this tie, and this is how you should walk. And the walk is pretty ridiculous, though. Like, no one walks.
It's pretty ridiculous.
And then I guess there was like, they had a little scenario like where.
Yeah, a little role playing.
If they're both sitting in the car, like this is the type of thing that you should do with Bree. And then this is where the girls come into.
Yeah, the women come in here right when they're kind of like cuddling together.
So I think what happens is Charlie gets up and he's like awkwardly walking away, like the same way that Jack told him to walk.
Right. It's the rich guy walk.
And Kate makes a comment about his walk saying, like suggesting some like ointment for that and blaming that for how he's walking.
Right, right.
So then we go to their neighbor, Lindsay, who we find out is 15 years old. We can confirm that from last week now. And she comes in to present Charlie to both Kate and Alex. She has dressed him up in her dad's clothes, and she feels like she's done a pretty good job.
They really squeezed her in here for no reason.
Yeah, you're right. So she was and in what before this? My Two Dads? Is that the show she was in?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know how many seasons that went on, but that was like, she was a pretty big deal on TV already before this show.
Okay. I didn't know that.
I think that's the order. I think it was that, then this, then Step by Step.
I think they're like, we want her on TGIF somewhere and we're going to squeeze her in here until we can figure out something better. And they do.
So, Jack comes in at this point too. He's got a bunch of groceries. Charlie goes out to the car. We also find out that, Lindsay has made a deal with him to drive her or to pick her up from school so all the kids can see her in a sports car, and then even to drive by all the kids' houses that were absent so they can see it too. And Jack goes outside to the car. You hear a scream from outside, and we find out that Charlie, and then we find out that Jack has returned the car, right?
Right, yeah. Charlie thinks the car is stolen, but nope, it's just taken back, and Charlie's car is been returned.
And Charlie feels like he has lost every single chance that he had with Bree at this point.
And he's probably right.
Probably is right, and he's going to make Lindsay a little upset, too, when she finds out the car isn't there either.
They never even addressed that, did they?
They do not.
Oh, poor Lindsay.
So we go to the kitchen. Charlie is talking to Kate and Alex, and he feels like that he has no chance now. Alex tells the group that Dawn wants to see them at the office once again. So that's where we go.
Right. And Alex and Kate are really trying to convince Charlie that Bree does like him.
Does like him. She wouldn't be going on multiple dates with him, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So we're now at the office. Charlie doesn't want to be there. He doesn't want to have to confront what's her name? Bree about this whole thing. Bree. And Bree's not there though. So they go into Dawn's office, and Bree's actually in her office, not at her desk. Charlie's hiding all over the place.
He just runs and hides under her desk. Yeah.
He gets under Bree's desk, who's like on the other side of the door from Dawn's office. So he's under her desk. We go back to Dawn's office, and we find out that she needs the team to fill 3 minutes of TV time for the show. And then, we go back to where Dawn tells Charlie that he needs to go talk to Bree. Like, he just needs to go do it, just right?
Tell her the truth, yeah.
So he tells her the truth about the car, and immediately she is now busy. She doesn't want to go on a date with him anymore. And we
Bree is out.
The She's only like, reason I she was in it was the Porsche.
I don't have any time for this nonsense now that you don't have a Porsche.
So the gang all heard the conversation that that the two of them had, and they all kind of talk about how people look at people differently because of what they have. And Kate says that she has an idea for the show based on this whole situation.
I'm not sure how I feel about this whole concept of like pigeonholing in a bit from the show at the end of every episode.
Yeah, because it seems like that's what it's going to be, right?
Let's
have something that happens between us. Let's teach a lesson, and then let's make a bit based on whatever we learned.
Right.
So we then go to the gang watching the show that they created this 3 minutes for. It's Here's Looking at You at the gas station. Charlie and Jack are playing the roles of a couple guys that work at the gas. Or no, one of they both work at the gas station, right?
Yeah, they both work there.
One of them is talking to a customer in a car, and then Alex pulls up in the Porsche, right?
Correct. Alex pulls up in the Porsche behind a guy who was just in like a beat up sedan. I don't want to say beat up, but like an average sedan.
So the customer in the original car gets all mad because all three of the other ones, Kate, Jack, and Charlie, they all go over to help the guy in the Porsche. And they're
Not just that, but because it's only Charlie that's helping, like, the first guy. And when Charlie goes to the back, everybody else comes out from the shop to do stuff, to, like, check his oil and change his tire. Like, they do the whole sort of, they come out and do the whole service.
Yeah, and the customer is all mad because he's like, oh, man, they're only doing it to this guy because he's got more money and he's got a Porsche. I paid all the same money that he did, and I'm not getting the same treatment. And they're all
And they tell him that. They're like, yeah.
Yeah, he's driving a European sports car. He's going to get better treatment than you. And then this is where they reveal that he's on a hidden camera show, and everyone laughs, and it's just such a great time.
It's hilarity.
So we then go back into the living room. Charlie is talking about his whole experience, and they all feel it's best that he found out about Bree and how she was before it got more serious than it did.
Yeah, but I mean, how serious is it going to get, right?
Yeah, who knows? Charlie jokes about his love being his love life being content for the show, and they joke about how they haven't gotten to Jack's love life yet. And Jack says that his love life is only available on pay-per-view. And then Kate tells Jack that his love life is pay-per-view. And then that's the end of the episode.
Which I didn't really understand that joke, but...
I don't know. He just
Oh, maybe he's paying per view. Is that so? He's like... Okay, that makes a little more sense.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not
good. And then they all run out to the beach.
No, they don't. Do they?
I mean, they do play that scene over the credits, yes.
Oh, yeah. I turned it off. So yeah, that's Going Places, episode 2 of the only season that it ever had. So let's rank these episodes.
Yeah, so
Are you ready? Because I'm not.
I'm ready. I'll do it. So at number 4, I've got Going Places. At number 3, I am going to do Full House.
Uh-huh.
At 2, I'm going to say Perfect Strangers. And okay. At 1, Family Matters.
Almost identical. I've got 4 and 3 the same, Going Places and Full House. But then 2, I have Family Matters, and 1, I have Perfect Strangers. I'm surprised you don't have Perfect Strangers at 1. I know you love Steve Urkel a lot right now.
I'm in Urkel right now. But that was a tough one. That could have gone either way.
There were two perfect Strangers scenes in this episode. 1, the laser scene, and 2, the rat trap scene with the ice.
You know, and I really like the scene, too, at the beginning where Balky crawls into Larry's lap. But
it's good, too.
There's something about Urkel right now that kind of gave him the edge.
Yeah, that's fine.
Barely, though. I will say, I was not as into this episode of Going Places as I was the first episode.
Yeah, I wasn't either. And I don't know what it was. Like,
I don't either. I don't know if it's just because it's kind of like, it's kind of the same jokes, or just it's kind of predictable. I don't know.
I still think the acting's pretty good, though.
You know, I thought less... Alan, the main guy, Alan Ruck or whatever his name is, I thought this time he wasn't as crisp as he was first episode.
I felt like they said some funny stuff on the show, though, that seemed like it was... I don't know.
I still think Kate's a strong character. Yeah. I really like Kate. And I thought Alex was a little bit better.
Heather Locklear didn't do anything this episode.
You don't think so? I thought she had some good like one-liner jabs.
I feel like she could have been left off the episode wouldn't even have noticed. Right. Yeah. But yeah.
We'll see where it goes.
So next week on our show, we're going to be talking about Full House. You're going to have to help me with this. Where are we at?
I can do it. Okay. We're at Full House Season 4, Episode 3. Family Matters, Season 2, Episode 4. Perfect Strangers, Season 6, Episode 2. And Going Places, Season 1, Episode 3.
Yep. Follow us on all social media at TGIFcast. You can go on our YouTube channel where Travis will eventually be posting a video of him opening up some trading cards from Sabrina.
I'm going to try to do it this weekend. I actually ordered a couple more trading card related Sabrina things off of eBay, and I was waiting for them to come. They came today, so
look out for that. Subscribe to the channel. Just search Two Guys into Fridays, and then you'll get an alert when that video does go up, and any future videos that we have. And then thanks to Sarah Joy Shockey at Sarah Joy Shockey on Twitter for the theme song this week. I don't think I have anything else. I might go watch Henry in June to find out why it was NC-17.
You're going to hate it. I can tell you right now. I know you. I know your taste in movies, and you are not going to like it.
All right, maybe I'll just go watch Predator 2 again instead.
Go watch Predator 2. That's about way more up your alley. Henry, I mean, it's a fine movie, but it's not your style. It is a slow, artsy, like romantic drama type movie. It is not your cup of tea.
All right, I'll just watch the first 15 seconds to find out why it's rated NC-17.
And you're going to be really disappointed. I'll tell you that right now. But yeah, I mean, you can go watch Predator 2. That movie's awful. That movie's so bad. Oh, God. And it's not. When's the last time you watched Predator 2?
1998, probably.
1990. Can you even remotely remember the plot of Predator 2?
I mean, isn't Arnold in it?
No.
He's not even in it?
He's not in it.
So no Get to the Chopper on this one?
No, not in this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's some monster thing that turns invisible and kills people.
Where do you think that happens?
Hopefully the whole movie.
No, I mean, like location-wise, where do you think that happens?
Oh, in my head, it's the jungle.
It's definitely not the jungle.
All right, I'll go watch it.
It's an awful movie.
I got to find the director's cut, though, so it's NC-17.
Okay. I have fun watching that, I will tell you that, because okay. I certainly didn't. So
it's not in the jungle, no Arnold, and...
It's Danny Glover in Los Angeles, so have fun.
It'll be good.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
Gary Busey's in it.
The only reason people like Predator is because they somehow got attached to the whole Aliens franchise, which is incredible. And
no, people liked Predator before that.
God, the first one's fine.
Bill Paxton, okay. Gary Busey, some other people I've never heard of.
No way, man. No way.
I'm ready for it.
All right. Have a good week, Steve.
You got it, dude.
It's Friday night and the mood is right. Gonna have some fun, show you how it's done. TGIF.
TBA podcast.